Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Brenton. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. As always, if you want to interact with the show, you can do so. 913-576-7610. Coming up in 30 minutes, I think it might be time for me to change who my favorite player is in the NFL. We'll get to that, but again, you're listening to The Drive here on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app. How are you guys doing today?
Good, man. Welcome back. Welcome back. Mace is back.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll get into the how I need to find a new favorite player in the NFL. So yesterday, Frank Clark of your Kansas City Chiefs went on a Zoom press conference and said that there will be no complacency about the Kansas City Chiefs.
You know, I feel like that's the biggest thing that happens when guys have success. Guys go win a Super Bowl, you know, got prima donnas, you got this guy wanting to go off and do this, you got different guys coming to work with different mindsets, they're not focused on the one goal, and that's to win the championship, and I feel like that's where our strength is, you know, and we haven't wavered from that, just having that short memory. Yeah, we won the Super Bowl last year, but that was last year. You know, some guys get, you know, cocky, they love that feeling, they love the emotions of winning it and carry that on their neck, that, you know, that's all fun, you know, that's nice, you know, it's pretty nice, it's cute and all, but, you know, we got stuff to do this year, and a whole new set of goals. We got to win the AFC championship, and that's where it starts.
So that is Frank Clark of your Kansas City Chiefs. There was a story I read yesterday from Frank Schwab. He writes with Yahoo, who will actually be on the show later today. And he did his own Levine's list, his own power ranking, and had the Chiefs the second best team in the NFL and the Ravens as number one. He then went on to say, I think the Chiefs are fantastic, but they're more of a 1B to me to the Ravens. I do believe in Super Bowl hangovers, and everyone thinks their team is immune. This is one storyline when it is about the Kansas City Chiefs that I don't really think we've discussed too much. And there's been an expectation where there's no way this can happen to the Chiefs. Look at the coach, look at the quarterback, look at the talent that they have. There's no way that they can have that Super Bowl hangover. He is right. Nobody thinks that their team is going to get fat and happy. Nobody thinks that their team is going to get complacent with just winning the one, especially when the Chiefs have talked about dynasty and building that tradition as much as they've talked about it. But this is going to be a storyline as we get closer and closer to the season. Are the Chiefs going to be able to avoid the Super Bowl hangover? So far, that hasn't really been a conversation.
More often than not, the Super Bowl hangover is for the team that lost the Super Bowl. So if I was the 49ers, I would be careful. The Chiefs, on the other hand, I just can't see a way. Like we always talk about, what's the basement, what's the ceiling? I feel like even if the S hits the fan, which it pretty much did last year, you were without Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill. You were without a couple of running backs, without Patrick Mahomes, without Frank Clark. I mean, everybody missed time last year that wasn't named Travis Kelce, and they still went 12-4 and ended up going and winning the Super Bowl. So it just kind of feels like this team, the way that they're built, they've got this safety net that maybe other teams don't have. And I don't understand how anybody, Schwab or otherwise, can look at these two teams and say Baltimore is a better team than the Kansas City Chiefs. Baltimore doesn't have a better quarterback. Baltimore has, I mean, if you think about the accomplishments that both teams have, and then when they've played head-to-head, we know the Chiefs have won both those games. I know sometimes people try to get creative, and maybe Baltimore's going to win more games than Kansas City. I think that Week 3 game is going to be critical this year. Whoever wins that one likely is going to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. But I can't really look at those two teams based on what they've been the last couple of years and say Baltimore's better.
I just look at it as this. I think there's three things that I would say why I feel pretty confident the Chiefs aren't going to have that Super Bowl hangover. Number one is their quarterback is too good. We've talked about it enough. I believe that the Kansas City Chiefs have the best player in the NFL. That's not always the case for the team that wins the Super Bowl. I also think that the rest of the talent on their roster is too strong. It wasn't one of those everything aligned type championship. I believe they have the best quarterback in the NFL. I believe they have a top five wide receiver in Tyreek Hill, best tight end in the NFL, one of the stronger defensive lines, one of the better defensive players in the NFL. I just think if we're making a list of the top 10 players on any team in the NFL, the Chiefs' top 10 is maybe as strong or stronger than any one of those teams in the NFL. And I just think their conference is too weak. Like, I can't really see a scenario in which they miss the playoffs. Like, you bring up San Francisco. We can see a scenario in which they don't win their division and then you're in a battle for the wild card spot, and there's so many good teams in the NFC. The AFC just isn't nearly as top heavy as the NFC, so I find it really hard to think that we can go through however long the season's going to be and that there's a chance that there's seven better teams than the Kansas City Chiefs. And once you get Mahomes into the tournament and Reed into the tournament, anything can happen.
And individually, so last year it felt like everybody was pulling the rope in the same direction, and that was to kind of get that Super Bowl for Andy, get it for the city, get it for Pat, get it for Clark and all that. But once you get that monkey off your back, now it's about legacy, C-Dot, for a lot of these guys. So when Kelce wins his next one and Tyrann Mathieu and Tyreek Hill and all of these guys, now we start to have the Hall of Fame conversation with those guys. So not only are they young, but it feels like they're still hungry because they know what they can do. And as far as Andy goes, Andy's getting up there in age. He'll be 62 when this season starts. It kind of feels like he wants to rip off 2, 3, 4 of these things before he walks off into the sunset also. And the only way to win two is to maybe win this one. So, I mean, I think that a lot of guys understand kind of where they are. They're not going to be complacent. It feels like this team's as hungry as they were last year.
So I want to play this. This is Frank Clark. He says that he and Chris Jones could potentially have one of the greatest defensive lines in the history of the league.
You know, he's a smart player. You know, he's so fun to be around, you know, off the field and even on the field, but he's such a smart player. And he seems like he just gets better and better. You know, I remember watching film on Chris when, you know, I was a younger player. Probably what, 3 or whatever, and he was just a year behind me, really. And watching him, and I'm like, wow, who's this young guy? You know what I mean? You're a beast. And you know, finally getting the chance to get out here, get acclimated with the system, and to be able to play with him. You know, last year was just, it was great. And now, you know, us, we talk all the time, and we look at each other, and we understand, you know, what's asked of us. We understand the type of pressure that's put on players like us. But you know, we embrace it too. You know, it's all fun. It's fun. Like I tell him, you know, have fun with it. You know, don't let it stress you out too much. And he tell me the same. Like, we're going to be the best, you know, two defensive linemen ever to play the game together. And that's one of the things we always talk about. You know, we got, you know, a few years to do something great. You know, just the reality of the game. You know, you got a few years in that window to do something great and to be the greatest you can be at doing it. And why not do it?
So that was Frank Clark talking about the relationship between he and Chris Jones, and that he feels there's a chance they could go down as the best defensive line duo we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. This would be, I don't know if a concern would be it, but I do think is a talking point. The same way that the Royals had going into 2015, there was this cloud of unfinished business. If you lose in the AFC Championship game the way that the Kansas City Chiefs did back in 2018, going into the season, your entire offseason, it's, man, we got to make one more play. We got to finish out one more drive. We got to get one stop better so we can put ourselves in the same position. I don't think that the motivation of, well, let's win two of these or let's win three of these is as strong of a motivation as you had to get to the actual point. So we'll see. I do think that Schwab makes a good point that nobody thinks their team is the one that's going to be content with their success. Nobody thinks that their team is going to be complacent. I don't think the Chiefs fall into that category. I still expect this to be one of the better teams because I look at their talent. I look at the window that they have. I look at the conference. I expect them to be one of the better teams. But I do think it's fair to point out again, I don't think the motivation of, well, let's win another one is the same as let's get to our first Super Bowl since 1969.
I think that the reason that it's kind of the same for the Chiefs is, you know, they always say there's that target on your back after you win the championship. It kind of felt like the target was on the back of the Chiefs last year anyway, you know, being the one seed and having Patrick Mahomes, the MVP, and getting as far as they did last year, going toe-to-toe with New England. It kind of felt like for a team that didn't win the Super Bowl, the Chiefs were the team everybody's gunning for last year. So I don't think they're going to have to deal with all of that. I do think that you look at all those guys like I was talking about individually and what they've got for their legacy. Frank Clark's another one of those, because if we're just going to call a spade, before he got here, he was, I don't want to say he was a no-namer, but he's kind of going to go from a no-namer to potentially a Hall of Famer if he keeps ripping off 3-4 Super Bowls. And I'm very curious to see what he can do through a full season, because last year he was hurt the first part, and the second half he was an absolute beast. But if you think back to the Legion of Boom, you think of Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas and, you know, some of these other guys. You don't think of Frank Clark. This is his chance to kind of establish himself as an NFL player. And potentially, again, if they win 3 or 4 Super Bowls, there's going to be a lot of guys that end up in Canton.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, I think it's time for me to find a new favorite player in the NFL. But coming up next, we are seeing a revolution in college football. It's time to discuss it. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive. Thanks so much for listening on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app. You can always interact with the show, 913-576-7610. It may be time for me to find a new player in the NFL. I'll tell you why coming up in about 15 minutes or so. But I think we are starting to see a revolution in college athletics. First, it was the Pac-12 and 400 players who made demands on things that they wanted to see before they decided to take the field. We also saw the Big Ten do something very similar, where they had multiple players today write a story for the Player Tribune saying that they wanted some things as well. Say what you want about how you feel about students being paid and whatnot and this kind of revolution and students sort of forming their own de facto union, what they're asking for doesn't really seem that crazy to me. So some of the demands that the Big Ten players were asking for: testing twice a week and testing the day of the competition. They wanted any COVID-19 liability waiver to be banned and thrown out. They wanted an automatic red shirt for a player who had to miss a game because of a positive test and because he had to quarantine. And they wanted Big Ten access for their players or for their families, so their families would be able to watch the game because they can't come to it. Those seem like very small things to ask for. I don't think we are seeing the building block towards players to get paid. I would say, especially with everything that's going on, I don't know, out of the smaller pie that college athletics is about to have, that we're going to see the administrations now just give some of that smaller pie up to the players. But what I do think we're seeing is college athletes understand more than they have really at any time of college athletics. We have a lot of power in this scenario. These games do not happen without us. So maybe we can't get everything we want, but we could certainly get a lot better deal for ourselves and make our playing conditions a lot better. I applaud what these students are doing, and I don't really know how any adult or anyone that follows college athletics could be on the other side of this.
Now's the time to do it, too. This weird 2020 world that we're living in with COVID and not knowing if we're going to have sports or college football or a champion in the playoffs or any of that. Now's the time, because your voice has to be heard. The questions are being asked, you know, will you play? What do you want? What's going to make you comfortable? So now's the time for these guys to say, I want testing. I want this. Oh, and I also want to kind of slip it in there, be paid for my likeness. I also want to get this or that. I feel like we're heading in the direction at some point of athletes getting paid, but that's one of those things that even once they decide, okay, it's cool, athletes can get paid, it's still going to take another 5-10 years before they figure out all the details.
So Brett McMurphy for Fox Sports, he also said that 1,000 Big Ten players were part of it, what they are calling the Big Ten Union, and the players wanted, as I said, better COVID testing requirements, and they also called out, quote, the laissez-faire approach, forcing each conference and school creating their own plan, resulting in inconsistent policies, procedures, and protocols. So I was reading the differences between the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and some of the institutions. One of the problems in the Pac-12 is USC's plan for how they're testing COVID-19 is very different than Oregon State's plan. So if you're somebody that grew up together and you were on Oregon State and you're like, hey, what are you guys doing? And then what they're doing is very different than what you guys are doing, and you play on USC, at some point you got to go up against the guys from Oregon State and they haven't been tested as stringent. And you're like, hold on. And what has helped pro sports actually happen is, number one, they have a union, which they are protected by, but all the rules, all the protocols, they have a commission commissioner. They are all following on one accord. That's not what's happening. That I think college athletes are asking a very simple question. Hey, if you're not going to pay us, that's not really what they're asking for. Hey, we're not asking for, hey, the quarterback needs to get X and the running back needs to get that. If you're not going to pay us, at a bare minimum, do everything you can to ensure that we are safe, that when we go out here and compete, and let's not kid ourselves, they are competing because the institutions and the universities need them to compete. When Wisconsin comes out today and says they think they could lose $100 million because there's no football, man, the number one reason you're trying to have these kids go out there and play is you need to keep the adults paid in this scenario. So if you're not going to pay us, at a bare minimum, let's test every day and let's ensure that every player is safe in this. That seems like a very reasonable expectation.
That's crazy that testing isn't uniform, especially in the same conference. You would think that the way the Big Ten does their testing, whether it's the nasal, which sounds absolutely awful with the Q-tip or whatever it is, it would be the same thing. It's crazy to think that two neighboring schools would do it two different ways. I'd say the same thing about the fans, because we're kind of hearing some teams are thinking about letting fans in, not college, but they're NFL teams that are still kind of wishy-washy. It's got to be one or the other. Like, that's the thing about COVID and sports. It has to be the same. So the testing has to be the same. If one team gets fans, all the teams have to get fans, because the competitive disadvantage is already so out there. We're going to have all these hokey and weird champions in every single sport. I mean, think about what we're talking about for college football. It's already weird where we've got five power conferences and only four teams that can make the Final Four, if you will, the college football playoff. And now this year, two of those conferences, the ACC and the Big 12, have decided, all right, we're just going to play each other, and then we're also going to add one game. The other conferences decided, no, we're just going to keep it in-house. I don't even know if they care at this point of college football. It appears that college football's goal is, let's start the season, let's try to finish the season, and we don't get give a damn if there's a champion.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just trying to make as much money as they humanly can, and we'll see what happens in this scenario. So the Big Ten today has announced their schedule. Every Power 5 conference has announced what their conference schedule plan is going to be. As you said, we'll see if you're able to finish and do all those things, but at least we have the regular season schedules for every team in the Power 5 conference. The Big Ten is scheduled to start 1 month from today. I'm asking honestly here. Do we think that we are 30 days away from seeing a football game played in this country amongst college students? It's one thing different in the NFL. They got a union. The players have agreed to it. The ownership group has agreed to it. They're on the same page here. Do we think in this country that we are 30 days away from seeing a major college football game played? Because I don't know if you guys have. I've been outside. I don't think we're 30 days away from that being the case. Not in colleges. I do think in the NFL, again, it's very different. They have assumed some liability and they get compensated very heavily for assuming that liability. That's not what's happening in these colleges. I don't know if we're really 30 days away from college football starting. I understand why they want to start as soon as they can. I don't know if it can start that quickly.
Well, based on how baseball has gone, the first, where are we now, 12 or 13 days, something's going to happen. The question is, how early is it going to happen and how big is it going to be? Because what baseball essentially decided CDOT was, that sucks. It happened at the very beginning of the season and a couple of teams have been asked to go away, but we're just going to go ahead and fight through it. That's what college football has to avoid, because you're right. It's hard to imagine that younger kids that seemingly would be less mature, that aren't making any money, that there's more of. There's like 72 kids on a college football team. They're going to be traveling. It seems like very advantageous, very wishful thinking to think that a month from today. But then again, hasn't it felt that way with everything? Like they told us about a month and a half ago, you have to wear your mask, but that was the same time the pro sports were coming back. It feels like what's going on is everybody's getting real antsy, whether it's people at their jobs or people wanting to send their kids back to school or the sports world, and they're just deciding, yeah, we don't know exactly what's going on, but damn, we're going to do everything we can to play.
I feel like what's happening amongst everything that's going on, especially with the viruses, it's starting to answer a lot of worst case scenario questions. Like if you're someone like me who hates the NCAA, who thinks that they don't really operate in the best interests of students, I've always asked myself, man, what if the students just came together and said, we're not playing in the college football playoff unless we get X, Y, and Z, where the administrations, the television institutions, all of these people are like, hold on, we got to try to fix this problem because we make so much money off of the product. Now, we might get an answer. What happens if college football player, like, what happens if the institutions deem that it's safe enough and the coaches want them to play? And then 400 kids in the Pac-12 saying, no, we're not playing football this year. I know what the text line is going to say. Well, just next man up, we'll get new kids. Man, we follow recruiting too much. We know these players too much to just think that now we don't care if they actually decide if they want to play or not. Like, I think what this virus is showing these students is we have way more power than we ever gave ourselves credit to. That these games simply can't happen with us. They're not calling up some kids from intramural to play on the football team. They're not calling random kids from the block to go play quarterback at UFC.
Yeah, but they're also not going to draft you in the NFL if you were one of the guys that didn't play. Also, because you'd be deemed as a problem child. Not only that, they don't have highlights, you know, because you decided to sit out that season. So it creates problems. Like, I can't imagine.
Can you do it, though, if it's 400 kids? Like, I hear what you're saying is, if you get star players to do it, you're right, like anything, you can't have the bottom end guys doing it. But if you get the quarterback at USC, the quarterback at UCLA, if you got 400 kids amongst the Pac-12, you got some prominent kids in there. I mean, we're seeing big-time guys who are first-round draft picks opt out of the season. That kid from Virginia Tech, who is a first-round draft pick, that today he went on Sports Illustrated and said, hey, I was in the weight room. We had 100 guys. They did not force us to wear masks. I decided then I don't want to play football this season. It's not like we're seeing kids that don't matter opt out of the season. We're seeing guys that we were excited to play on Saturday and guys that are eventually going to play on Sunday say, I'm not playing this year.
I think a lot of that's going to happen during the season for every single sport. Think about what baseball is going to be like. Think about the Royals. If the Royals keep playing at this pace and they're out of it mathematically by what, Friday? All right, a little bit of hyperbole there, but they're out of it here, you know, in the next month or so. At that point, what are they really playing for? So if guys have health risk or if guys want to get back to their family, there's going to be a lot of, and I don't feel comfortable all of a sudden. It's one thing to have a deadline to say, okay, you got to pull your name out and say, I'm not going to play. It's a whole nother thing when your team sucks, you're in the middle of the season, and then you're like, wait a minute, I've got a chance just to go home. That's going to happen.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. But coming up next, my favorite player in the NFL may no longer be my favorite player in the league. I'll explain why coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List, which is now brought to you by 7th Street Casino. As you guys know, if you listen to this show for any amount of time, my favorite player in the NFL is Russell Wilson. You guys might be asking, why is Russell Wilson my favorite player? Well, his middle name is Carrington. And you know how there's some musicians or groups that you saw way back when? I remember it was a regular Saturday. It was an 11 a.m. ESPN NC State game, and there was this quarterback named Russell Wilson. And I'm watching because I'm just excited the college football season is starting out. But I'm like, you know what? This Russell Wilson guy's pretty good. So I kind of followed his career a little bit. I followed him when he went to Wisconsin. You remember the first preseason start he had was here in Kansas City because Seattle had signed Matt Flynn. Russell Wilson started that game. He played really well. He was then named the starter and has never looked back, and I believe he is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer at the end of his career. So I've always been very partial towards Russell Wilson. He's by far and away my favorite player. That might have to end today with his Instagram post.
Hey guys, Russell here. Yes, the typical boring, yes, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. You know, I'm real excited. But anyways, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be, and I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you gotta be unlimited. You know, you gotta have a thought process of being unlimited. So when people ask you, you know, what you're thinking about or what you want to do in life or where you want to go, you got to be unlimited. Tell them, I'm unlimited. You know what I mean? So when they ask you certain questions like,
who brings you motivation, Russell?
Mr. Unlimited.
Who's your role model, Russell?
Unlimited.
Who is your go-to person for advice, Russell?
They think Pete Carroll. They think this person, think that person. Love you, Pete, but it's Mr. Unlimited, Tom.
Before we move forward, I just want to send a very quick apology to Patrick Mahomes, because from a media standpoint, I've always compared you to Russell Wilson. As interesting as I believe Russell Wilson is, he doesn't really say a lot of interesting things in media interviews. And for a long time, I felt that Pat was the exact same. Now, I'm not all the way ready to say that Pat says a lot of interesting things in interviews, but you know what? He ain't Russell Wilson. He ain't calling himself Mr. Unlimited. I feel bad that Russell Wilson's my favorite player in the NFL. I might have to look for a new home. I might have to look for a new favorite player because that's not any activity that I can endorse. That's not a player that I can endorse. I would never feel good wearing a Russell Wilson jersey or a t-shirt knowing that he called himself Mr. Unlimited. That's not somebody I can endorse.
You know how on the bottle of prescription pills it says don't mix alcohol with this? I'm not suggesting that's what happened or anything, but sometimes my Uncle Stewart does that.
How much alcohol do you think he had? Was it unlimited? I just want to know.
You're not supposed to mix that stuff. That's what my Unc sounds like, where he starts calling himself names and he's walking around in his boxers. It's not a good sight. And then he wants me to chime in. Like, what's Russell Wilson's wife? Sierra?
Sierra?
Yeah, he was having Sierra chime in. And my uncle does that. He's yelling at me, want me to call him names. Like, no, I'm not going to call you that. It's time for you to go to bed. You're right. I looked at his college stats. Absolutely
fantastic
incredible.
College player.
The year you were talking about, so when you discovered this Russell Carrington Wilson as a freshman at NC State, 17 touchdowns, one interception. And then by the time that he had transferred to Wisconsin as a senior, just the craziest stats I've ever seen, 33 touchdowns, four interceptions, and a 192 QBR. I don't like him, though. Not after what I just heard.
I actually think that Russell would have had a chance to win the Heisman Trophy when he was in college. But if you remember, they lost on two consecutive weeks. Wisconsin lost on Hail Mary plays. If those don't happen, I think Russell Wilson can then win the MVP. I think that Russell's suffering from a little bit of Sean Levine syndrome.
What the hell is
Sean Levine syndrome? You love to give people nicknames that no one else is going to call them. No one. And I mean nobody, not Sierra, not his mom, not his two kids. No one is going to call Russell Wilson Mr. Unlimited. Not Tony Romo, not Nance, not Buck, not Aikman, nobody. Nobody will ever call Russell Wilson Mr. Unlimited. It's not a thing. Just like Junk Jones is not a thing. Just like any of the other nicknames that you've tried to unilaterally decide are football players, those aren't a thing. So this is Sean Levine syndrome. The point of a nickname is that other people call you that. Like, you guys call me C-Dot. Other people call me C-Dot. I'm not the only one that calls myself that. The only person that calls Russell Wilson Mr. Unlimited is himself.
What's the worst nickname, Mr. Unlimited or the Sports Machine?
Mr. Unlimited.
Think so? I appreciate that. Yeah, that's a bad
Mr. Unlimited might be the worst nickname I've ever heard since. Remember when Kevin Durant wanted to call himself the Servant?
Yeah.
That might be the worst nickname I've heard since then.
My nickname should stick, though. Like, that's everybody else's fault, not mine. How does Junk Jones not stick? That's just creative, man. And if you don't follow it, that's on you.
Because
Junk
he
Jones,
calls
the
40-yard
dash.
Different.
Stone Cold's not Stone Cold Jones? What? Why? Junk? I think everybody knows why Chris Jones would be referred to as Junk. Come on, man.
One of my favorite things about you on a very serious level is you don't really like any other quarterback in the NFL.
He's
outside of
too.
Patrick Mahomes.
Big Junk Jones.
Okay, let's calm down.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to call that man
All
Big
right.
Junk
That's
Jones.
Fair.
I would calm down just
That's
a little
fair.
Bit
That's
here.
A little uncomfortable.
One of my favorite things is you don't really like any quarterback in the NFL aside from Patrick Mahomes. And I would say Kyler Murray starting to inch his way on the list.
I do like Kyler Murray.
I don't know if you 100% like Kyler Murray, because something tells me week five, week six, you will turn on Kyler Murray. But right now, the only person firmly on the I like this guy is Patrick Mahomes, but there are some quarterbacks that I think you hate. Like, there are some quarterbacks that you have decided they stink. You don't even want to entertain the possibility that they can be okay. One of those individuals is Derek Carr.
I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm tired of being disrespected. So there was no question I was going to play this year.
Yo, Derek Carr is tired of people like you disrespecting him. Derek Carr says he goes out there, he busts his butt, and people like you continue to disrespect him. So he's not opting out of the season because, Sean, he wants to earn your respect.
Well, then go out there and win some games. I don't remember the last time that the Raiders were a relevant football team. And Derek Carr, sometimes this happens. A quarterback early on in his career has a nice season, and then we all go, oh my gosh, he was in the MVP conversation. And then they just live on that for 4 or 5 years. The last 3 years, Derek Carr, 21 touchdowns. That's in a full season, by the way. 21 touchdown passes. The year before that, 19. The year before that, 22. You'll get respect when you start throwing a lot of touchdowns because you're a quarterback. That's your job. And he's a below average quarterback who doesn't win games. So I don't know what to tell the guy. If he goes out there this year and throws 33 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, then I'll give him the due credit, but I'd be shocked if he does that.
Respect isn't given, it's earned. It's really that simple. It's not given, it's earned. He hasn't really done much in NFL circles to earn our respect. You're
right. That 1 year, 32 touchdowns, 13 picks. Everybody, oh, he's so good.
He had the good year. He got injured, and his career could have went in one of two ways. We now know the way that it went. He could have bounced back. This was a minor setback. I'm going to play better than I played before. You remember, Watson got hurt his rookie year. He came back, was the same player. That's not really what happened with Derek Carr, and he has been a very different player. Amongst two different coaches, two different offensive coordinators, two GMs, now he is on a series of 3 one-year deals. I actually think this is the last year that Derek Carr will be the quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. I'm actually surprised that he actually made the trip to Las Vegas, but I don't think he is going to be there very long. I just think he's very, very limited, and I think the injury that happened and how it happened, I just don't think mentally he's the same guy anymore. I don't think he's mentally tough enough to overcome the injury that happened. I don't know if he's somebody that can carry your franchise and organization. I think he gets replaced at the end of the year.
He is also always bad when we see him as Chiefs fans because, well, everybody is in the division. The Chiefs are, what, 27-2 in their last 29 division games? Well, that means that you've dominated probably the other team's quarterback, which is why a lot of people think Phillip Rivers sucks, including myself, because every time I see him, he's throwing 3 interceptions and he's yelling at a bunch of dudes. I feel like it's the same thing for Derek Carr. Every time I watch that guy, he's throwing the ball on the ground, he's turning it over, he's getting sacked, his team's getting their ass kicked. Every time I watch him, I come away unimpressed. And then I look at his stats and I go, okay, maybe he's okay. But the way that you should judge a quarterback these days, do they win football games this year? Should say last year, 7-9. The year before that, 4-12. The year before that, 6-10. It's not like he hasn't gotten an opportunity.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. Last quarterback here. I don't know where you sit with this guy anymore because I would say before the Arizona Cardinals were the apple of your eye. You know your team was the Pittsburgh Steelers. It didn't matter who was on the team, who left the team. You loved Pittsburgh. You thought they were a legitimate contender. And then last year happened. The injury started to mount up. Antonio Brown, he's played for like 4 teams since he last played for the Steelers. James Conner, maybe was a little bit of a fluke. Juju Smith-Schuster, he seems more interested in being a TikTok star than being a star NFL player. They're having a whole lot of problems. But you know what? Ben Roethlisberger, he's back this year. He is well-groomed. He is well-shaven. And he says, you know what? I still want to win.
I didn't feel that I'm close to that yet. I'm not saying I've got 10 years left in me, but I definitely feel like I've got some really good years left in me. So that was definitely a motivating factor, was coming back and showing that I still have it in the tank. I still have a lot to give this team. I still have a lot to give the fans. And I still want to win Lombardis.
Ben Roethlisberger said he wants to win Lombardis, not another Lombardi. He said that he wants to win plural Lombardis. Big Ben, I'm here to tell you, sir, you already have your Lombardis. 2, you're not winning another one. You're certainly not winning multiple. I don't think Pittsburgh's making the playoffs this year.
I think Pittsburgh makes the playoffs. I actually think that Pittsburgh, there's a chance that Pittsburgh kind of hangs around with Baltimore for a while in that division. I think Pittsburgh's a good football team, not because of their offense or Big Ben or Juju or James Conner or Mike Tomlin, but because of the defense. That defense is absolutely stacked. I mean, think about it. Minka Fitzpatrick was on the short list for NFL Defensive Player of the Year. TJ Watts, one of the best defensive players in the league. Devin Bush was great as a rookie. Bud Dupree, that team is absolutely loaded on that side of the ball. I see Pittsburgh as a team that probably wins 10 or 11 games, and maybe, just maybe, as the season goes along, the conversation that we've been having this entire offseason, who's the third best team in the AFC? It's either Chiefs 1, Baltimore 2, Baltimore 1, Chiefs 2. But who's 3? I'm not going to be shocked if it ends up being Pittsburgh.
I'm just going to sell on old, injured, and not in the best shape. Like, Ben Roethlisberger's never been the healthiest of individuals. He's now in his upper 30s, and he's coming off a massive injury. I watched this Zoom teleconference. He was kind of explaining the injury that he had last season, the process he's going through to come back. I just don't know if we're going to see Big Ben be that elite, high-volume passer. Think about it. In this little resurgence that he's had the last couple of years, you had Antonio Brown alongside of it. Can you turn Juju into that kind of guy? Can you turn James Washington into that kind of guy? I just don't think they're going to have the firepower that we're used to seeing from Pittsburgh. And I also think that division's better. Cleveland's a better team than I think than they were the last time that Pittsburgh had Ben Roethlisberger. I also think that Cincinnati's going to be a little better. Are they going to be a playoff team? No, but I can see Cincy winning 4 or 5 games this year. I don't think Pittsburgh makes the playoffs.
Yeah, Cincy still stinks. Cleveland's as much much of an unknown this year as they were a year ago. Just because last year we thought that we knew something because we had a little sample size of Baker Mayfield. Well, then he went out there and crapped the bed. So they're still incredibly talented. They've got a new coach. It's not a question of talent. If you start listing who are the most talented teams in the NFL, honestly, Cleveland probably comes in like five or six. That team is absolutely stacked. So you're right. It's a tough division to play in. But as far as Big Ben, you don't really know coming off an injury like that. The last time he played a full season was back in 2018, and that was the Pat MVP season. There was one quarterback that threw for more yards than Pat that year, and it was Big Ben. He threw for 5,129, also had 34 touchdowns and 16 picks. So you never know what a guy's going to look like coming back off an injury, but the last time we saw him, he was damn good.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into a brand spanking new Levine's List. But before we do that, Rob, hit the music. One movie that I was excited to see, Sean, this year was Mulan. Now, not the animated version, but the live action version. Yesterday, the good folks over at Disney said, you know what, Carrington, we're going to give you the opportunity to watch this movie. It's going to cost you not only what you already give us for Disney Plus, great service, by the way, $30 on top of that. Is this the wave of the future, Sean? Are we going to have to start spending $30 on demand to watch some of the premier titles? Because $30 is pushing it. This, to me, is a price that only makes sense if you have a family. Now, if you've got three or four kids, yes, you're saving money by doing this. If it's me and you're only going to take one other person, I ain't really saving no money at $30. So I hate to say it, I will be watching this in perfect HD on Fire Stick Records. You guys can figure out what Fire Stick Records is, but I'd be damned if I'm going to give Disney $7 a month and give them $30 to rent one movie. Oh, no. Can't do it.
How many times can you watch it?
I don't know. I think you get like a 48-hour time.
As somebody that grew up going to the Dollar Theater at Metcalf South, which cost a dollar, so I could have seen 30 movies or I could see Mulan at home. This is absolutely ridiculous. That's way overpriced. I understand what the movies are doing, and it definitely, to answer your question, is the wave of the future, because I hate to tell you, as the guy that loves movies more than anybody I know actually going to the theater is dead. The theater is the dinosaur. It is gone. Everybody at this point either has their own home theater or a TV and a sound system that's pretty good when you're not willing to pay all the money for the popcorn and the soda and the ticket. And on top of that, the COVID world, so you don't have to leave home. I hate to tell you, bud, the movie theater's dead.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, the last time that we were able to go to the movies, they made $14.5 billion last year just in America. So people like going to the movies. We'll see how they like the movies after all of this is over. One question that I have that I think fits in the Mulan category, that I'm a big believer that every kid that's our age had one VHS that you watched tirelessly. Maybe it was an old Disney original movie. Maybe it was something else. That movie for me is Little Rascals. You know, I was going through the YouTube wormhole a couple of days ago, and Little Rascal movie clips came up. And I'm telling you, I could quote that movie like the movie just came out yesterday. I have probably seen the Little Rascals on VHS at least 30 or 40 times. That was my movie growing up as a kid. Alfalfa, Spanky, all of them.
Petey.
The Blur. Great, fantastic movie. What was your VHS as a young youth?
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. I know you haven't seen this movie, Carrington, which is why you're looking at me side-eyed. The Princess Bride. Every time I was with my grandpa, my older sister, hey, can we watch The Princess Bride? Damn it, Jillian, we just watched it twice last week. It's the same thing. The Man in Black, Princess Buttercup, Andre the Giant, all that crap. I've seen that movie, Marriage. It's why I've seen the movie 172 times. I can quote it from beginning to end. It's a great movie, but if I never watch it again, I'm fine.
Let me correct myself really quickly. The text line is saying that as long as you continue to keep your Disney Plus subscription, you can actually continue to own Mulan for the $30.
It's so still a ripoff.
A little bit of a better deal. At 20, I actually wouldn't have any problem. I probably would pay that extra 10. Now you're pushing it. You're pushing it here. 20, I got no issue paying 20. That's 10 for me and 10 for another person. 15 for me and another person for the 30. No, I can't do it.
No,
but again,
that's a big difference at 20 to 30. I remember when hats used to be 20 bucks? You'd walk into any hat store, you got 20 bucks, you can buy yourself an MLB at $59.50. Once they went up to 30 and now like 32, 40, no, I'm out.
I would understand, though, if you have a family. If you have a family and you got three or four kids where going to the movie theater, it was $40 for just the movie ticket.
Nah, maybe for Philip Rivers.
Two of your kids. I mean, two
Antonio Cromartie. If you got 18 kids, it's worth it. You're talking about a normal family?
Yeah, I mean, if you got four kids, how much do you think it is to go to the movies if you got you, your wife, and two kids?
I don't know. You tell me you go all the time. How much is it?
I would assume.
There's got to be some sort of discount for the young bucks,
so
right?
I'm saying, so let's say you go to an AMC movie theater. I'm going to guess just at a bare minimum, it's probably $50 to just take your family to the movies.
Absolute craziness.
And then that's not even counting you getting anything else. That's just, it's $50 for you to buy a ticket and go see the movie. So I'm saying, for families, I actually think $30 is a good deal. If you're just an adult and you got an adult relationship and you want to go see this movie, $30 is an absolute ripoff. Rob, what was your VHS movie that you've seen repeatedly?
The OG Star Wars, all three. It's now A New Hope. It was not A New Hope when I was watching it on VHS, but A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. That was at my sister's house. When we were there, we'd pick a Star Wars movie, enjoy Star Wars. It's why I'm a Star Wars fan today, and it's why I hate The Phantom Menace, because I was so excited to go see The Phantom Menace as a kid, having seen these VHS all the time. And then this came out, trash.
Are you surprised that that was a Rob answer?
No.
You gave a Princess Bride a teen movie. Yeah. I gave Little Rascals.
Yeah.
Yours was one of the five most popular movies of all time. You didn't have some Rookie of the Year, Major League 2, Little Big League. There was none of those movies you watched on VHS. Star Wars. So Star Wars. So you're telling me I could have said Scarface in this. That was the movie that
you
I grew
were watching
up
Scarface
on.
As a kid. Don't lie.
That's questionable parenting if you were. I've seen Little Mermaid probably 70 times also because I grew up with two sisters and a bad babysitter. He used to stuff us down in the basement and make us watch that VHS on rerun. So I can tell you all the Under the Sea. I know every word of that movie too.
Beauty and the Beast was my Disney. I don't know why.
That's a great movie.
I love Beauty and the Beast. That's actually my favorite Disney movie. I love that movie.
Gaston.
Did you know why?
Did you like the live action?
Yeah, I thought it was... I didn't love it, but I liked it.
I haven't loved any of the live action, to be
Aladdin,
honest.
Aladdin's really good.
Yeah, Aladdin's great. Jungle Book was great.
Jungle Book was okay.
I loved Jungle Book.
Did you guys like Lion King?
No, Lion King sucked at all.
Yeah, right?
It was no good.
All right, just making sure.
Lion King was like they did one of those Nature Geographic documentaries and they just put famous people's voices over the thing. It was absolutely. That's the last time that I paid for a movie that I'm like, I got absolutely ripped off here. They owe me money.
I was really looking forward to Lion King, too. I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be the best of all the live animation or whatever they call it.
I paid to see Lion King, let you know how much I was looking
paid?
For it. As I'm saying, you know.
You paid?
Dude, I don't ever pay to go to the movies, and I go all the time. I actually paid to go see Lion King, and I felt absolutely ripped off. I paid AMC. The text line is, you guys know, I paid AMC prices to go see the Lion King. Absolutely ripped off. Hated every single minute of it. Coming up in just a little bit, we will get into some big names are still set to opt out of the season. And Andy Reid talked about how the Chiefs are handling opt-outs this year. But before we do that, let's get to a brand spanking new Levine's List.
Do you remember who my favorite character in Lion King is?
Rafiki.
That's right, the wise old baboon. Speaking of movies, we always break down the movies by different genres, baseball, football, comedy. What movie makes you cry? What's the scariest? Here's just the 10 best sports movies, in my opinion, ever made.
Sean, if you gave me the Sean Levine quiz of what you say, I would get 100% on it.
Guaranteed. Number 10, He Got Game. Do you remember what school they went to in He Got Game?
Big State is where he ended
Big
ended
State
up
U. Number 9.
This, I actually watched that like 3 days ago.
It's a great movie. Number 9, people either, I feel like you've got two opinions of this movie. You would think it's like the funniest movie of all time, or it's one of the more overrated movies of all time, but there's no in-between. You ever seen Caddyshack?
I have seen Caddyshack before.
What do you think about it?
I love it. It's great.
Okay, so you're in that group.
It's not one of my favorite movies, but it's enjoyable.
To me, number 9. Number 8, Wax On, Wax Off, Karate Kid. Maybe it just holds a special place in my heart because I remember exactly where I sat in the theater between my parents when I saw Karate Kid. Whatever that old theater in Olathe was called. Number 7.
I actually like the remake more than the original, but that's
no
me.
Way. That's crazy.
I think the remake's actually really strong.
It was the original was great. Number 7, you're going to clown me for this one. I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I feel that way, and it's my list. Rudy. Rudy comes in at number 7. I cry every time I watch Rudy, including a couple of weeks ago on TBS. You can count on Rudy to come on TBS every 2 weeks with Forrest Gump. Number 6, Field of Dreams. Again, it just kind of depends on how you grew up, if you like or hate Field of Dreams.
I think it's a good movie. I think it's one of those movies like you got to have a very special relationship with your father to kind of relate to it. But I mean, I think it's a good movie.
My top 5, number 5, The Sandlot. That's another one of those movies you were talking about as a kid. I've probably seen Sandlot 100 times. Number 4, Remember the Titans. Number 3, Major League. Number 2, Hoop Dreams. Not enough people talk about Hoop Dreams. Like, I swear I almost put that at number 1.
It's a elite sports documentary. It might actually be, like, the first really big sports documentary.
and still the best. I'm trying to think of a better sports documentary that's been made.
It kind of counts like, are you counting the ESPN 30 for 30s?
All of them, man. That's such a good movie.
The OJ one's much better than Hoop Dreams. I'm saying it's not
well,
that many.
They had 8 hours to get it right.
Yeah, it's not that many.
Hoop Dreams.
There's a really good documentary called When We Were Kings where it follows Muhammad Ali and his fight against George Foreman. That's actually really good. I actually think that's better than Hoop Dreams, too.
Is that old?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never even heard of it. I'll check it out. But Hoop Dreams, if you haven't watched that, just unbelievable. And then number one, I think most people would agree, Rocky. My favorite Rocky, of course, the original. I believe yours is Rocky 3?
Yeah, Rocky 3 and then Rocky 1.
And that is today's Levine's List. If you're curious, just off the list, Friday Night Lights. I didn't know what to do with Mighty Ducks because I love that movie so much, but it couldn't make this list. That is today's Levine's List.
Friday Night Lights would make my list if I had to do so. White Men Can't Jump would have also made my list. I love Miracle. I feel like I'm the only person that
No, you're not. You're absolutely not. Miracle is a great movie.
I love Miracle. The scene where they're doing the suicides and they keep going, again, and then they finally say, USA. I don't know. It gets me every single time. I really like that movie.
Bull Durham would have made my list. I really like Bull Durham.
No love for Cool Runnings?
No.
Jamaica had a bobsled team. No, Did you not know that?
You made the list. It didn't even make your honorable mention.
No, it didn't.
So you don't got love for the Jamaican
bobsled
team.
Don't accuse us of not having love for it.
You
number
don't even
18,
have love for it.
Cool Runnings. I mean, come on. John Candy was the coach of a bobsled team.
Coming up next, Andy Reid was on Fesco in the morning, and he explained how the Chiefs are dealing with the multiple opt-outs that they have. We'll play it for you. Coming up, it's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.